What's up, you guys? Time for the movie retrospective.
Yeah.
Got a good one. Kind of a forgotten Canadian film. It actually, this one was actually literally forgotten. Like, it came out back in 1974, and then it was sort of, I don't even know if it was lost. Most of the things that it was, like, lost until somebody found it in the mid-1990s and re-released it, which is kind of fascinating. Because this is actually a pretty, this movie was actually, like, a lot better than I was expecting, I have to say.
I'm going to have to see it again. I liked it, but I got so relaxed in the middle of it, I fell asleep. Fuck it, I don't know
what. Yeah, so most of the movie I was watching it, I kept hearing,
it was like,
while I was
yeah, but it was really good. It was basically about Ed Gein, and it's pretty close. You know,
yeah.
In general.
There was
in
some general. Artistic license. Yeah. We'll get into that.
They're trying to make it a horror movie, which, you know, shit, that motherfucker was a horror movie anyway.
Yeah. I
mean, but it was good. And the guy that played it, Jenny was recognized him. She goes, man, that's a dude that played LeBay in
Christine. John Carpenter's Christine.
And I was like, that sure is, man. That's that dude. And he plays a dude that's supposed to be Ed Gein.
Ezra Cobb is the name of the character.
Yeah.
But
it's Ed Gein.
Yeah, he dresses the same and everything.
Yeah, and a lot of the same shit happens. I mean, it's not verbatim, but it's in general. A little bit like Psycho.
Yeah, well, I mean, Psycho was based on Ed Gein. Texas Chainsaw Massacre was based on Ed Gein. Silence of the Lambs was a little bit based on Ed Gein.
Yeah.
This one, at least at the time that this came out in 1974, was the most accurate, even though, as I said, they did take license with some stuff. Which I'll get into, like, what they changed and stuff, but yeah. So, it's usually just under the title Deranged, also known as Deranged Confessions of a Necrophile, which is a little bit of a misnomer, because, one, Ed Gein wouldn't ever cop to necrophilia, and two, there is actually really no necrophilia in this movie.
Yeah.
But the working title of this was Necromania. Now, interestingly, okay... So this had two directors. As I said, this was Canadian. They actually shot this in Ontario, even though I guess it's supposed to be Wisconsin, but I don't think they really say, like, where it really happened. So this was co-directed by a guy named Jeff Gillen and a guy named Alan Ormsby. Now, Alan Ormsby, if you don't know that name, he actually started out as a makeup artist and was, like, a really big deal, like, makeup artist. He was also a director, actor, and a screenwriter. He actually got his start writing, doing the makeup effects for, and starring in... Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. Have we reviewed that yet? We should.
So. Yeah.
That was one of the first movies that I saw when I was
that.
A kid. Yeah, it's not great, but there's something about it that I really, really like. But I had forgotten that Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things was actually directed by Bob Clark, the same guy that did Black Christmas and A Christmas Story and Porky's.
This is better. This is better movie than that.
This is way better than Children Shouldn't Play with Dead
much
Things.
Better.
Honestly, it really is.
This movie is as good as the first Chainsaw Massacre, I think.
It's different.
It's not like
but
that. It's different. It's slower, a little more depressing, you know. He's living with dead bodies and shit.
And it's almost
creepier.
Like it's like a black comedy, too, I want to say. Like, and I think it's deliberately a black comedy.
Yeah.
Whereas Texas Chainsaw Massacre, not really so funny, I guess. It had like sort of funny stuff in it.
And
but
the acting is pretty good. The acting's good.
Yeah, the guy that plays Ezra Cobb, you know, Ed Gein, Roberts Blossom, and I saw him, and he's in there, and he's talking, and I'm like, God, I know that voice. It's like, that voice is, like, so familiar. I know I've seen something a lot of times that dude was in, and then, like, 2 minutes later, it hit me. That's LeBay from Christine.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like, for the John Carpenter one from 1983. Yeah. Now, I feel like most people, though, will recognize him as Old Man Marley in Home Alone. He was, like, the guy with the shovel. Yeah, so I kind of feel like most people remember him from that. But he was in... I looked at his Wikipedia page. He died in 2011, sadly.
Okay.
But he was working up until the late 90s. And he was also in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He was in Escape from Alcatraz. He was in The Last Temptation of Christ. So he was in a fuck ton of stuff. He's also a poet, and he did like a bunch of theater and a bunch of TV. So he was in a fuck ton of stuff. But I think, please correct me if I'm wrong, but Deranged might be his only leading role. He was usually like a character actor.
He's great in it. He's good.
He's
real
fucking
good.
Fantastic in this.
Yeah.
He is so good. It's like, he embodies, and I don't know if what that says about him as a person, but he like embodies this fucking role.
Real
you like
creepy.
He's real creepy.
Yeah, real creepy.
Creepy.
You buy it.
Oh,
you're
big
like
time.
Going, okay, yeah.
Everything about this, he acts pretty much exactly like Ed Gein acted, yeah. But it doesn't seem like he's acting.
No, he nails it.
He's fucking great.
You kind of lose track that this is...
I kind of did.
That's not Ed Gein, because he does come across like Ed Gein.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, super awkward, like, almost a little bit sympathetic, because he was kind of stupid. Yeah. Not stupid, but just kind of... really, really sheltered and, like, didn't really know much of anything and kind of pitiful.
Yeah, it started to get real interesting, and then I fell asleep. But it didn't have anything to do with the movie. I was trashed, but, you know, I was trashed. But I was enjoying the movie. I was going, oh, man, this is a good one.
It's so good.
This is a good one, yeah. And all of a sudden, he started dating this girl and everything, and she was talking about, oh, yeah, I talked to my dad, and he passed away, and he's going, oh, yeah, because he talked to his mom. He's got his mom in bed. The body, the dead body, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, this is going to turn out bad. And they were having some kind of seance, and I was creeping out, and I just fucking, I fucking left my body.
Yeah, because I was talking to you, because I was like making jokes like the movie, because, you know, like I do. But then, like, he started snoring, and I was like, oh, okay, well, there's that.
Yeah, but so it just started to get real interesting, and I fucking slipped away. I got to go back and finish it.
And honestly, this, I will say that, like, the start of this is a little bit slow.
Yeah.
And one thing, I watched a few other people's reviews of this, and one thing that seems to be kind of divisive about it is whether people liked the narrator character or not.
Because I liked it.
I did too.
Yeah.
But some people were like, yeah, I didn't really need that. You could have just, like, showed it.
The narrator comes into camera like he's doing a damn news
like during
report.
The scene, like, here's what's going on.
Yeah, but it made it
like,
cool,
breaking
though.
The fourth wall. Like, I liked that.
I liked it, yeah.
But, like, some people were like, yeah, we could have done without that. But I didn't mind it,
this
though.
Is a very low budget movie. It's like, it's very
$200,000.
Yeah, very low budget. But there's something about that kind of adds to the creepiness, and the narrator stepping in adds some cheese in it that takes some of the fucking, I want to say it makes it better, because you're not really, you know, you're watching a production. It's kind of theatrical in a certain way, you know, and when you see that, there's no way to describe it. It sets the tone of the movie. You're not taking the movie 100% seriously, which allows you to enjoy it more. And you kind of take it, you actually take it more seriously. There's no way to describe it. It's.
Yeah. So you know whether or not you like the narrator character or not, because honestly, he just comes in at the beginning, like doing kind of like a little prologue, like this movie is based on real events, and, you know, maybe if it's not for the squeamish and blah, 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 we tried to like make it as accurate as possible, which is not entirely true, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But then, like, throughout the rest of the movie, like, there'll be a scene, and, like, there'll be some shit going on. Like, you know, Ezra will be there with his mom, and his mom's dead or whatever. And then, like, the narrator will kind of, like, come in and be like, blah, 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 blah.
I can explain what I was trying to explain now.
Okay.
What it is he comes in, and when the narration comes in, it kind of reinforces to you, the audience, that they are telling you a story.
Yeah.
Okay? And that what you're seeing is a theatrical rendition of a story that really happened. So your imagination kind of piles on top of what you're seeing, going, yeah, I know that's not a real dead body, but imagine that that was really happening in this real story that they're telling you about. So there's kind of like two things going. At least that's the way
it almost had to me.
It made you take it a little bit more seriously in a way.
I kind of took it in the same in the same vein as something like In Search of,
right?
Where you had like a narrator, like you know, the Leonard Nimoy stand-in,
and you're seeing a reenactment,
and you're seeing a reenactment going on behind it, and he's like talking about like what's happening, like updating you on some shit.
You're seeing a reenactment, but then you're imagining what it really would have been like. It would have been even worse than what they're showing it.
Yeah.
So it's effective. I thought it was very effective.
I did as well. But like I said, you know, your mileage may vary, because I know some people liked it and some people didn't like it. That was kind of one divisive thing. Pretty much one thing everybody agreed upon was Robert Blossom, the guy that plays Ezra Cobb / Ed Gein, was amazing. I mean, he's worth watching this just on his, he's fucking skin crawling. Like he's just so good. He just embodies that role so much. Also fucking great, the effects. For a $200,000 movie, the corpses and shit like that look great. You know why that is? Because the co-director and the screenwriter, Alan Ormsby, one, was like a big big deal special effects guy. And guess who his assistant on this movie was.
Who?
Some little nobody named Tom fucking Savini.
Oh, Tom Savini.
Now, interestingly, if you look at Tom Savini's Wikipedia page, it says that his first job, like his career filmography thing, starts in 1978 with George Romero's Martin. However, he was an assistant to Alan Ormsby on this, and on YouTube, if you look up Deranged Making Of or something like that, there's like an hour-long documentary that I guess came out in like the 90s. Like, it's pretty shitty quality, like VHS quality, but some parts of it, they have all this like Super 8 or 16 millimeter footage of them like making the movie, like behind the scenes shit, and Tom Savini like narrates a bunch of it, like saying, oh yeah, I remember how we did this, that, and the other thing. So he absolutely did work on this movie, and you can see him in a couple of the shots, like setting up some of the stuff. He wasn't the main special effects guy, but he was an assistant on it, and that's kind of why, even though this movie was like a nothing budget, the corpse effects look great. Yeah. I mean, those corpses look really, really
good. Tom Savini, I think, is the first guy that actually got blood right.
Yeah.
From what I can remember.
Now, the blood doesn't look great in this one. It still looks like red tempera paint.
Yeah, but that was the problem with old school blood.
Yeah.
It looked like fucking yellow, orangish red ketchup.
Yeah.
But to the naked eye, if you were there on scene, it looked red. But there's something with the color processing. When it, after the film was processed, it would come out kind of orange looking. If I remember correctly, it was Savini that figured out how to get it to look good. I think it's green, isn't it?
Yeah, like adding some green.
I think he added green to it, and it almost would look black.
Yeah, you want it to look kind of brown or like maroon.
Right. It didn't look red to the naked eye, but then when it went through color processing, film, you know, it would come out looking blood red. And I think he was the only guy that figured that out. And then his formula, I think, got ripped off, and everybody started using that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think he cared about that. He was just kind of him, or I don't know if it was him or Rick Baker or Dick Smith, I think, was his was one guy that he was real influenced by. But I think those guys like figured all that out, and then
it
leaked out. Okay, because yeah. I kind of feel like the special effects guys, they kind of like share all their fucking.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit that you guys don't know what color it is, like in Alien 2, you know, Aliens, those. You know, the smart rifles and the pulse rifles that the Marines had, they looked like they were black and green. But that was color processing. And if you look at the actual guns, the ones that they used in the movie, they're brown. Do you know that?
Yeah.
They're like purplish brown. Purplish brown and black.
Well, that's what I mean. When the thing about it is that reality and how things turn out on film
looks very different.
Looks, and it depends. Well, and I'm not a filmmaker, but I'm a graphic designer, and some of the same shit applies. Because it has to do with the film stock. It has to do with print. It has to do with what kind of paper is it? What kind of ink is it? What kind of, you know, the color is going to look wildly different depending on what the medium.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I was looking at the pulse rifles and shit, and on screen they look green and black, but they're not. They're brown. They're kind of a maroon.
Yeah,
maroon and black, but they knew that they made them that color because they knew they'd turn out looking green once the film was processed.
They've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, that's why they have all these big crews with all that technical expertise, because it's not just, you can't just point a camera at something and have it turn out the way you want it. It's like there's a million things you have to like think of, million considerations.
Especially back then, video is probably not as bad.
But
film was a chemical process.
Yeah.
And it's just not accurate.
Yeah, you never know how the shit's going to turn out. So as I said, so the special effects in this are like punching way above their weight for such a cheap-ass movie.
Yeah.
Now, I will note, and I didn't know this was when I was watching it. This is actually on Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, it's free on there at the moment. When I was watching it, I think it's 84 minutes, 82 minutes, something like that. Now, when I was watching a documentary about it, they brought up this one scene. They said, oh, the scene where Ezra Cobb cuts off the top of somebody's head and scoops their brain and eyeballs out. I was like, wait, I don't remember seeing that. Turns out that scene was cut out by the MPAA, or was, you know, the MPAA said you have to cut that scene out to get an R rating because it was like it was gruesome.
Too grabby,
so it's not in the movie that's on Amazon Prime, but if you look on YouTube in that documentary that I talked about earlier, that hour-long one, that shows that entire scene. Mm. It's kind of shitty quality, but you can still see. And it's a shame they didn't leave it in there. Maybe at some point, if they could restore it, and maybe the Blu-ray one will have it, because there is like a really funny scene where he just saws off the top.
This is a good movie.
It was like scooping it around.
This would be worth having on Blu-ray from what I
think it would be, too. Yeah. It's like this, there's just something really, really, as I said, I was expecting all all I knew about this movie. I had never seen it before. As I said, it was pretty much lost from shortly after it was released in 1974, and then somebody found it in somebody's fucking garage or something like that in the 90s. So it was lost all that time. I feel like people kind of forgot about it. It's Canadian, so a lot of people kind of forget about a lot of Canadian
kinda
films
like
as
Canadian
well.
Canadian metal.
Yeah, it's just, well, it's that kind of thing. I mean, if it's not like Black Christmas or something like that, everybody's just kind of like, Canadian movies, what? Yeah. Even though there's a really lot of good Canadian horror movies, there really are. But this is, and this is one of them.
Yeah, My Bloody Valentine.
My Bloody Valentine, yeah, that's also a great one. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of good ones. The Gate, or not The Gate. Yeah, I think The Gate's
Canadian.
Yeah,
the one with the kid with the hole in the ground.
Yeah. That's also really good. So there's a lot. And actually, if you subscribe to Brandon Tenold's channel, because he's Canadian, so every year he does Canucks Exploitation, like 1 month, and he'll do like all Canadian horror movies, which is really funny. But yeah, so this is Canadian, so I kind of feel like it was forgotten. So I didn't see it at the time. I had heard the name of it, and I vaguely knew that it was sort of based on Ed Gein, and that's all I knew. I was expecting this to be terrible, but maybe fun terrible. But when I was watching it, I was like, this is actually really good.
I would have loved it.
It's actually really good. Yeah. And I think, as I said, the effects really elevate it. The acting really elevates it. Not all the actors are great. Like, some of them are kind of amateurish. But because the guy playing the Ed Gein character is so good, and most of the time it's focused on him, it really, really kind of elevates this way beyond just some trashy, like, B-movie.
It's kind of movie that back in the 80s, you know, my friends would have said, dude, man, we got this fucking illicit fucking video from the video store. There's only one copy. You're not supposed to be seeing this shit. It's a lost movie. You pop that bitch in there, and you're like, and it's eerie. Everything I saw was very eerie. Like I said, I want to finish it. It's a good quality movie. It's not an expensive movie. It's fucking dirt cheap. But I would say, on par with, like, what was it, Basket Case? Kind of like that kind of production, but better. The tone was a little more credible, I guess you could say, in a way. The acting better, a lot better.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably more like on the lines of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the first one.
Like, and it's like weird that, because this came out the same year as Texas Chainsaw Massacre, either a couple months before or a couple months after. And the strange thing about it is that I don't think it was ripping off Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because they would have probably had to be making them around the same time. But this has a scene, it's not exactly like the one from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it's similar. You know, like the dinner scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre where she's like strapped to the thing? There's a scene like that in here, but I was like, well, who ripped off who then? Or did anybody rip off anybody? Maybe just because it was based on the same thing. It was based on Ed Gein. Even though, obviously, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was wildly different. It just took a couple of things from Ed Gein. This is a lot closer, even though it adds some stuff that Ed Gein didn't really do.
Yeah, this one kind of, like, in some ways, kind of reminds me of Henry's Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Kind of. Except
but
this is, like,
not as serious.
Yeah, this one has, like, dark humor.
Yeah, kind of a tone not quite as silly as Evil Dead, but almost, you know what I mean? It's you just got to see it. It's hard to place it.
Yeah, it's a really strange tone, but it was a tone that I was, like, really into.
Yeah, it was good.
Because I kind of like this sort of, like, dark humor. All right, so let's do, like, a little thing of the plot, and then we'll say where it deviated from what Ed Gein really did. So what you have at the beginning is you have Ezra Cobb, who is taking care of his elderly mom. And just like in Ed Gein's case, the mom was kept telling him, like, oh, women are whores and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And she's dying, so she dies, and he can't even. Like, he can't deal with it. And he seems not normal at the beginning, but he doesn't seem, like, crazy until after she dies.
He seems harmless.
Yeah, he just seems like kind of a harmless sort of, not idiot, but just a very simple, he's a simple man.
That's about like what Gein was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his mom dies, and then at the funeral, you can tell that he's sort of starting to teeter over into maybe like delusion, because you know, his only two friends, the only other two people that come to the funeral, they're just like, oh, you know, your mother looks so nice, like, in the coffin or whatever, which is a weird thing that everybody always says at funerals. I don't know why.
She's just sleeping.
Yeah, she just looks like she's sleeping. And he's like, well, yeah, she is just sleeping. Shh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're like, uh-oh, here it goes.
Yeah.
But it actually does take a year while he's in the house, and he seems to be having trouble. He kind of like acts like she's just gone, like on a trip. Like he keeps her room the same and keeps the stove on in there. He lays her clothes out and he's like, when are you going to come back? Blah, blah, blah. And then he starts doing like the Norman Bates thing where he's like talking in her voice. Why don't you come get me? You left me down here in the grave. God damn it. It's so dark and cold down here.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. It's kind of like Norman.
Yeah. It's like, it's funny, but it's also kind of like creepy at the same time. And so he's like, I'm coming to get you, mama. So like it takes a year and he goes and like digs her up. And the funny thing is when he goes to dig her up, at first, like, he opens the coffin and he thinks that she looks the same as she did when she died.
Yeah, no.
And he's like, oh, yay. Like, she looks, you look just the same, and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, reality intervenes.
Yeah,
and she's all fucking blue and fucked up.
Like, yeah, the cops pull him over when he's got her in the front seat. The cops knew him.
Yeah.
He made an excuse that he had killed some kind of...
Like a hog.
A hog or something, and it was in the front... They didn't really check, though. They were like, man, fucking clean that car out. Time to they let him go.
Yeah. He's just like, I butchered a hog.
Yeah.
And then he said, and then after the cop, home. And then after the cop leaves, he's like, I'm sorry, I've called you a hog, mama.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucked up. So he keeps mom at home and, like, talks to her, and apparently she talks back to him. Now, his neighbors get concerned because they're like, well, you're living in that house by yourself, because obviously they don't know he has his mom's corpse in there. And so they're like, well, you need a lady to take care of you. You need to get married and start dating and stuff like that. And he's obviously like a virgin and doesn't know anything about anything. But he remembers that before his mom died, his mom said the only woman that she ever trusted was, because women are whores and just full of disease and sin and everything. It's like the only woman she ever trusted was this woman, like a friend of hers named Maureen Selby. You know, and do you know why mom trusted her? Because she's fat.
That's right. Only fat women are trusted. Only fat women are trusted. That's
what, because she's fat. I guess.
So he's like, okay, he buys
that. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay, that fat, makes complete total sense.
She goes out to go get him a fat girl.
So he decides he's going to go see her.
Yeah.
At which point, they start, like, she's kind of like, oh, hey, like, you're the friends with the mom, and, you know, she like, lets him in, and at first, like, he says, he lets something slip that he talks to his mom, and she's just kind of like,
you talk to
your mom, she's like, I talk to my dead husband, too, everybody makes fun of me, like, she doesn't realize that he means, no, I literally have the corpse of my mom in there that I talk to, so she's like, you know what we should do? We should have a seance, and, like, I'll talk to you, and, like, we'll talk to the dead, I'll talk to Harold, or whatever the fuck her husband's name was, and we'll talk to your mom, and it'll be, like, really cool, this is completely fictional, by the way, obviously, like, Ed Gein did it, but it's really funny, and so, so this little woman is like, so they're having the seance and she starts channeling her dead husband's voice, and basically her dead husband is saying to Ezra, hey, you need to like put the dick in on my wife, and it's okay with my blessing. And it's
she's trying to talk away to some dick. It's fucking hilarious. I was laughing and that's about when I fell asleep.
Oh, so you didn't see what happened after that?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I said, I was fucking laughing and I fucking fucking talked out.
Maybe we should spoil it.
I was laughing.
But yeah, so obviously that was a fictional thing. That woman was not one of his victims.
That was his thinking, though, I think.
But that was probably, so it's...
He went after fat girls.
Parts of it are, like, fictionalized, but not... Yeah. Yeah, but not that much. But this woman is, like, a complete, fabrication. So after that kind of whole situation... he's killed a real person, so now they kind of go more into the actual Ed Gein story, where he goes to this bar tavern thing, and he meets this waitress who works there, and develops, like, a fixation on her. Now, in the movie, she's called Mary Ransom. That's not her real first name was Mary. Now, interestingly, though... In the movie, they say to her, it's like, that the bartender, the narrator says, she works at this bar or whatever, and she's 34 years old, but a little bit over the hill. And I was like, hey, 34 is over the hill suddenly? Okay. But yeah, maybe, but well, no, but maybe because in real life, that woman that worked at the tavern was like in her 50s.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe that's what they meant. But the character they specifically said was 34 and then said that she was over the hill. And I
well, a little bit over the hill might have meant that she drank a lot and she was ragged out. They were like, rode hard, put away wet.
I guess, but she didn't look that bad in the movie. Yeah. She looked pretty good, actually. Right. She looked pretty foxy still. I mean, she looked like she was in her 30s, but she didn't look like...
Dude's making the movie, were probably in her 20s.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. Man, she's an old bat. Yeah. But yeah, I just thought that was really funny. But the real victim that this is, you know, that this is representing was actually 20 years older than that. So maybe that's where they're kind of getting that from. But yeah, so he kind of gets fixated on her and lures her back to her house because he actually slashes her tires and then is like there helpfully like, oh, hey, I'll take you to a gas station, you know, to get new tires. And then he's like, oh, no, I have tires at my house and I'll put them on for free, you know. And she's just kind of like, doesn't really want to do that. But then he's like, no, come on, it'll be fine. And then he goes in the house. And this is actually the best scene in the movie, I think, because she's kind of like waiting for him out in the truck, and then he won't come out anymore. She's like honking the horn, like, come on, I want to go the fuck home, where are these tires? And then finally, like, she's just like, fuck it, and she goes in the house, at which point she sees all of the corpses, because Ezra slash Ed has been real busy. It's not just his mom now. He has like a whole bunch of corpses in there, and he's also made himself a Leatherface ensemble where it's just kind of like where he has like a face and it has like this long woman's hair and he's wearing this like dress and like a thing with like tits on it and everything like that, and it's creepy. It's like really like just the whole scene where she comes in and like just takes in this whole room and he's just like sitting there with all these other corpses. It's creepy. That's like one of the best scenes in the movie, I think. So there's that.
And nobody's really gotten down to the bottom of fucking what Ed Gaines' fucking issue was. I mean,
because he certainly had one.
He did. He had all kinds of issues, but he never fessed up to any of them. There weren't any witnesses. He just dug up a lot of dead bodies and tried to preserve skin and made a woman's suit and, you know, all kinds of weird
made
stuff.
Made a belt out of nipples. Yeah. Had a box full of vaginas.
Yeah, he had fucking, and he wasn't killing people at first. He was just digging them up.
Yeah.
He had some bowls made out of human skulls and he had stuff in the garbage can. But they don't know what he was doing. I think he was kind of a transvestite. But instead of dressing up in women's clothing, he put on skin and clothing.
Well, I think that's where they got the Silence of the Lambs, the Buffalo Bill idea from.
But I don't think he was a transsexual. I think he was a transvestite. Like Ed Wood.
Because like I said, those are two completely different things. Which they kind of got into a little bit in Silence of the Lambs, because he's saying he's not a real transvestite.
Yeah.
Or he's not a real transsexual, rather. Because, that's not really the same thing.
I think he was a transvestite.
Yeah.
And he was putting on his mom's clothes, and then he started putting on his mom's skin, and then he started putting other people's skin on. But it didn't have anything to do with him wanting to become a woman. It was just... made him feel better somehow. Made him feel like, I don't know. I think maybe it was bringing his mom back to life.
Yeah, maybe he was like personifying her, which, like I said, that was kind of like what Psycho was kind of getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it might have been that. I forgot to mention that the reason in the movie that he first started robbing graves was because when he got his mom, which Ed Gein never did that. He didn't dig his mom up, but he does in this movie. But when he dug her up, she didn't look so good, obviously, because she'd been in the ground for a year. And so he got the idea from one of his friends talking about an obituary, which he didn't even know what an obituary was. That's how sheltered he was. And he's like, you mean they put it in the newspaper when people die, like right after their funeral? And he's like, woo, score. And he even says it out loud to them at the table. So even if you needed like parts, you could just a head or something like that. You could just, and they just think he's joking, but they're like, no, he's totally serious. And he can't understand like why they think it's so funny. And it's just like, so that's, I don't know, that was like really funny to me. But so he started like robbing graves to like fix up his mom, like start patching her up so she would look better. She's got little bits like stuck all over her like that. But that's how he started. But yeah, like it sort of went, because the thing about this is the movie kind of like compacts everything into like a short period of time. Because in real life, it was, what, like 8 years or
did
something?
It for a long time.
Where he was doing it for a long time.
Yeah, he didn't dig up his mom, did he?
No.
I think he was digging up the other women as a substitute for the mom, though. Maybe he was afraid to dig up his mom, or she had been dead for too long when he came up with the idea. There was some reason why It definitely had something to do with his mom.
Oh, well, yeah. Because it seemed like his whole life, like, revolved. Which is very common with serial killers. They always have really weird relationships with their mom.
He's trying to make a mom doll or something.
Yeah, I think it definitely was. But yeah, so this victim, like I said, in the movie, he actually kills the woman, the seance woman, and that's like was like his first kill. But that's not a real woman. Like, that's not, it doesn't have anything to do with like one of his real victims. But the woman that works at the bar, that's like based on a real victim, and pretty much the same thing happens. Although in the movie, he like bashes her in the head with this cane that he made like out of a bone, like a thigh bone. In real life, I think he shot her and then cut her head off.
Yeah, in real life, he was doing weird things. He'd kind of like sexualized this whole thing, where it kind of got meshed in with, I guess, sexual attraction. He didn't have normal sexuality.
Clearly,
I think he was a virgin.
I think he was too.
Yeah,
and they kind of portray. They don't say it out loud in this movie, but they kind of portray it as he doesn't really. Know.
I think he was trying to make some kind of mom doll in real life, and somehow him dealing with all those body parts, and they weren't his mom, but there somehow it kind of got infused with some kind of sexual, making belts out of nipples and stuff.
And which they don't
think of some shit like that.
I know that's crazy, and that you know what they don't really show this. The movie is like fairly graphic. But they don't show, they do show that he makes things out of the bodies. Like I said, he has a cane made with a thigh bone. Yeah. He has bowls made of skulls. He has, like, a violin that he made, and he said, oh, that's not catgut, you know what I mean? Like, he made the string out of intestines or whatever. And so they show that, but it's not as gruesome as maybe they would have nowadays.
In real life, he had a woman's face, and he had it made like a mask. It was kind of hanging up in front of a window. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
Inside.
They do show he has like a couple of faces.
I think it had lipstick on it and everything.
Like I said, that's some Leatherface. That's where...
Fuck, it was crazy.
I mean, Ed Gein was so fucking crazy that all of these other... all of these horror movies are based on him. There are so many.
Yeah.
I think there was a movie that came out in... 2011 or 2012 or something like that was just called Ed Gein or Gein or something. And I'm assuming that that was more accurate to like what actually happened. But when this came out in 1974, this was actually the most accurate Ed Gein movie, even though they took some artistic license.
Yeah, and actually I don't think, if I remember recall correctly, I don't think Ed Gein qualified as a serial killer. I don't think he killed enough people, did he? It was mostly digging up dead bodies. I think he only killed two.
He just killed two.
Two, yeah.
I mean, but it was pretty horrible enough, and it's like... I mean, the two they knew of...
It was kind of gray, not quite
serial
sexual, and I think the feds said that really to qualify, you have to kill three or more. But, you know, he was there on the edge. He was a weird fucking dude.
I think they should give him an honorary serial killer medal or whatever.
But then they
kind
of said, well, the motive wasn't quite sexual. He was just a weird dude, man. Fucking, and they said at his trial, they showed him some photographs of, he had a body hung up in his, when he was working on it, he had it hung up.
And they show that in this movie, because that was like his last victim, which I was going to get to in a little bit.
During his little trial, fucking, they confronted him with the evidence, and they said that he looked at that picture for fucking forever, and he said the expression on his face is like he was seeing something intensely beautiful. And he asked to see more of the fucking photographs of it. He was just reliving it. So he had somehow sexualized all that.
And he had kind of a thing, and it's kind of portrayed in this movie too, where he doesn't really... You can tell he's crazy because he doesn't really seem to understand why other people... Like, he knows... Like, when he robs his mom's grave, he knows, like, when the cops pull him over to hide it, right? Yeah. He knows enough to do that. But then later on, as I said, when he's at the table and they're talking about an obituary, they're talking about, like, an old teacher of theirs that died. And he's like, oh, you mean they put that in the paper when somebody dies? It's like, oh, well, if you need parts and stuff. Like, he's just talking like it's a normal thing to talk about. And, like, everybody just thinks it's so weird. They just think he's joking. And then later on, when Mary, the bartender lady, when she goes missing and it's in the paper, and his neighbor says, oh, they'll never find that girl. And he's... Ed is there, Ezra is there, and he says, oh, you know, she's not missing, I've got her.
Yeah, they probably laugh.
And the guy's like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And he's like, I've got her, I'm back in my place. I've got her, and I got Mom, and I got Mrs. whatever the teacher's name was, and all that. They're just like, whatever, you're crazy. Yeah. But he was serious. But it's like they didn't, so he didn't really have any compunction at all about it. Well, he's like, I've got her. Well, like, they're just the most casual fucking thing in the world.
Based on memory, you know, Ed, the real person, Ed was kind of like way below average intelligence. He was not an intelligent guy. I think they said he was just borderline mentally handicapped. But people didn't take him seriously. They didn't think he was a threat.
Yeah, and that's kind of how he's portrayed in this. Like, nobody really... He says shit out loud, and, like, no, everybody just thinks he's kidding or he's kind of dumb or something.
He was borderline dumb, real dumb.
Yeah.
But I can understand, you know, who would think of this? You know, it just kind of goes to show you can't let the dudes that dumb fucking just out on their own for, you know, who've been in that shelter. He was kind of feral in some ways.
He really didn't seem to have any issue. Yeah. Yeah, and so the last killing in the movie, which is similar to what happened in real life, he targets, his neighbors have, like, a teenage son, and the son has a girlfriend. In the movie, her name's Sally May, and she's real young in the movie, obviously. She's, like, a college student. In real life, again, she was in her 50s. But this is meant to be the same character, because she works in a hardware store. Ed goes in there, and... Yeah. I think in the movie they show him just going in there like one day, but I think in real life it was like over 2 days or whatever. But he just goes in there, he shoots her, takes her back to the farm, and hangs her up by her feet and starts like cutting her like, you know, like a fucking cow.
I think in real life he shot her around closing time and then took her out through the back. They thought the place had been robbed.
Because there was like blood all over
the floor. Yeah, there was some blood. He took her. They found her quickly.
Yeah, well, working on her. It's because, and this is kind of a little bit different to what they show in the movie, but in real life, he bought something, like he bought some antifreeze at the store, so his, his sale on the cash registry, he was the last one that had bought something, so they said, he was the last one in the store, so we got to go out and check because he was the last person to see her alive, yada yada. So, and then they found her, and he was like still working on her, which is similar to what happens in this. What happens in this is like I said, the girl, the victim is actually young; she's in her 20s, whereas in real life she was in her 50s. But he shoots her and puts her in the back of the truck, but then I guess the bullet just grazed her or whatever, and then so she wakes up, and she, like, gets away for a little while, but then she falls into, like, a rabbit trap or something, and then he finds her, and then he takes her back, and he actually doesn't buy, this is really weird, he doesn't actually buy the antifreeze in the, he brings it to the counter, but then she's like, oh, well, you just want the antifreeze? He's like, no, I'm gonna look around for a little while, and then he goes and, like, loads the gun and shoots her with it, but so his thing isn't on the register, but the only reason that they know is because the neighbor and the kid were in there when he came in, so they knew that he was, like, the last guy that was in there, so they said, we need to go out to the fucking thing, because they find blood all over the floor. So it's similar to what happened in real life, but not exactly. But yeah, so, I mean, if you have any interest at all in Ed Gein, and you haven't seen this movie, as I said, it does take some artistic license with some of the stuff.
Yeah, but it's good, though.
It's way better than it really has any right being.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
Because I was just expecting some schlocky, like, act, but it was really, I mean, the effects are fucking great. The corpses and stuff look fucking great. You know, the fucking dude that plays Ezra Cobb / Ed Gein is awesome. I can't believe this might be this guy's only, like I said, starring role. So he was like a character actor. Maybe. He might have had a starring role in some other stuff, too. I guess, I mean, you know.
This movie's like, if you were to go back in time before the internet and see this in the year that it came out, it would have blown your mind. Because you would have said, that shit really happened. You know, and you wouldn't have really been able to pick apart very well the original case and how it's shown in the movie. You just would have saw the movie and go, yeah, that was it. That's how it happened.
And, yeah, you know, it's similar. It's pretty much similar. It's kind of like, you know how The Town That Dreaded Sundown?
Like that.
Which was like about the Phantom Killer.
Yeah.
And it was like, had some different shit in it. Like, everyone's names were changed and they did the thing with the trombone, which didn't really happen and stuff. Yeah. But other than that, it was fairly similar. Yeah. This one adds an extra victim and makes the victims younger and changes a couple of the details. But other than that, this is pretty accurate. Oh, and like I said, has him take his mom's body from the grave, but that's not a huge stretch because he did take a bunch
of
other
people. That's pretty much Ed Gein. Pretty much.
And honestly, now that we're thinking about it, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which came out in 1974, also loosely based on Ed Gein, actually also started with, this is based on a true story, even though this movie, Deranged, is way more accurate to the Ed Gein case than Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, other than the skin wearing and the house and everything, really didn't have much to do with Ed Gein at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just... One, yeah, but this one is
obviously recognizable as Ed Gein.
Because he even wears that that plaid, you know, like, jacket and hat.
They pretty much capture the tone of his personality. That's pretty much what he was like. And he didn't do all that stuff, but he did a lot of that stuff. But they got the tone of his character. That's like, he was like that.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I heard that, I don't know if this is true, I heard that Christopher Walken auditioned for that part, for the part in this movie.
That'd have been a trip.
Which would have been really funny.
Probably wouldn't have been as good.
I don't think I can imagine, now that I'm thinking about it, now that I've seen it, I don't think I can imagine anybody other than that dude in it, because that dude...
He nails it.
He fucking nails it. Yeah. I mean, he's exactly like... And like I said, you forget that he's acting. Yeah. Like, even he has, like, the weird facial tics that he has and those freaky, like, bright blue eyes. Like, just the facial expressions and the way he, like, purses his lips and shit like that. It's fucking... It's incredible. It's, like, really, really good. It's
crazy.
It's really good.
Crazy New England farm boy out in the middle of nowhere fucking doing this shit.
Well, it's Midwest, not New England. Yeah, it's Wisconsin. Yeah. But,
Midwest,
yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, so, if you haven't seen Deranged from 1974, it's definitely worth watching. There's all kind of, like... This kind of, like, early roles for an early kind of, like, crew stuff for, like, a lot of really famous, like, horror people, like I said, like Tom Savini and stuff like that, like, later on. And it's definitely, definitely worth watching. I had a really good time with this. Way better than I was expecting. And also, like, kind of a dark comedy. Starts out a little bit slow, but once his mom dies and he digs up her body, like, it gets, like, way, way, way better. But yeah, so it's definitely worth watching. It's on Amazon Prime. If you have it, you can watch it on there for free. Don't know where else it is at the moment, but definitely check it out. Or if you've seen it, let us know what you think about it in the comments. And that'll do it for this movie retrospective. We will see you guys on the next one. Bye.